Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, you're listening to NHN Radio, where horses have a voice. This is DC, your host. The music I just played is called Far From Home. It's appropriate for tonight's show because my guest is animal communicator Tim Link. And we're going to be discussing lost animals, animals that are far from home, how we can find them, and more importantly, how can we keep them safe at home. Tim's been real busy lately, including a trip to Denver, to share his stories. We'll also be discussing Tim's new book, Wagging Tails. Now, before we get started, did you know that Simply NHN not only has natural products for horses, but we have a new canine muscle and joint blend? Check it out today at simplynhn.com. Now, let's get on with the show. Well, welcome, Tim, and welcome any listeners we have out there. Tim, do you want to start? Should we start talking about your book, or should we talk a little bit about the lost animals?
Well, we can talk whichever one you want to talk to. I'm just glad to be here and be able to talk to you again and talk to the listeners. And if anybody obviously has any questions or anything that comes up from our conversations, then don't hesitate to chime in, give us a call, or drop us a note, and be glad to answer your questions.
Exactly.
But, I guess I can plug the book a little bit first, and then we can go on to some discussion about animals that have left home and are lost and how we can go about finding them or at least giving you a better understanding of what's happening with them to help you deal with the situation. But the book is out and it's ready to be purchased, so go out and get a copy. The book is called Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail, and it's a collection of 32 stories of animals that I've worked with, and it also has 24 helpful hints and tips that you can start implementing today to make your life better with your pets. And this particular book, the 32 stories, deals with items that, I sort of cover every day, items such as behavioral changes within an animal, and we are trying to determine if it's a physical change or a mental situation or is an emotional thing that's causing their behavior to change, and then put together some steps for you to help your animal out and get through that situation. There's also stories about lost animals that we have that have come up missing and that we've found and brought back home, and in some cases we don't get to, but I think in this particular book it deals with mostly the ones that have returned back to their homes. And then we also have stories about the transition process, what our animals are going through during that time of transition when they're ready to pass over, and how you can better understand that process and deal with that grieving process. So we try to get a nice collection of the things that I work with every single day, and I think the book turned out well. It's one of those books that you can spend a couple of hours with and hopefully feel good about the time you spent, and it will get you to think a little bit. It'll open your heart and open your mind a little bit. It's a very lighthearted book, or light reading book, so it's one of those that we don't go into a lot of detail about what animal communication is or how to do it, but more so about what are these beautiful animals going through and how do we help make their lives a little bit better.
And I have to say, well, I love the book. My grandson is reading it right now, and he loves it. He was just fascinated when I started telling him stories about you, Tim, and I said, well, here, I'll let you read the book, and then we'll talk about it.
Excellent. Well, that's awesome. And that's one of the interesting things about the book. I really wanted it to be about the stories. I wanted people to connect with the pets in there. There are pictures of the pets. Most of them are cats and dogs because that's what I worked with mostly early on when I uncovered this gift. But you know, there's pictures in there, so you connect with the pictures. You probably had one of these types of animals in your life or knew someone that did. Or the stories you've experienced yourself, whether it be behavioral challenges or animals in transition or animals that have come up missing. And I think one of the biggest pleasures I've gotten so far out of the responses I've received is the young adults. You know, children ages sort of 9 to 16 years of age have been attracted to the book. Many of them have purchased it for their summer reading programs, which I thought was fascinating. And it's just a pleasure to be able to sort of open the hearts and minds of young children to the fact that, you know, there are ways you can communicate with your animals and ways to better understand that. Mm-hmm. And this is what the book's accomplishing. And that's something I had not planned on, never even fathomed in my mindset that it would be a kind of book that would be attracted to young adults.
Oh, wow. And you know what's good is it's like a beginner book into the world of animal communication because, you know, kids are more open-minded, I think. But still, when I talked to my grandson, he was like, you could tell he was like a little skeptical at first, like, what? How can you talk to animals? And so it's great for starting that mindset, you know, opening the mind a little to different ways of thinking. That it's not so cut and dried where you just speak to them. It's more telepathic.
Exactly. You know, it's opening up your heart and opening up your mind and allowing it to flow through. And, you know, people ask me what the biggest challenges early on that I experienced as well as other people that I've sort of taught or have talked to about, you know, connecting with your animals and communicating with them. And one of the things that I've come across is, you know, it's the fact that I think we are in tune with our animals and I think we do receive information from them, but then we let this thing of self-doubt creep into play.
Right.
You know, did I really hear that? Was I imagining that? You know, this can't possibly be happening. What does this mean? That can't mean what I'm thinking it means. And so we start to overanalyze it. We start to let self-doubt creep into play. And the next thing you know, we just discard it. And then we end up shutting our minds and our hearts to the idea. And so I tell people, you know, the great practice is just to get in your quiet zone, whether that's through meditation, whether it's through prayer time, whether it's through just sitting there doing nothing, and open your mind to it, open your heart to it, and just start asking questions and see what you get. And write the answers down. And then when you're done, take a look at them. See what they say, what they're telling you. And I guarantee you that you're probably getting a lot more out of it than what you even imagine. And so that's
Absolutely.
What we talk. Yeah, so that's what we talk about in the book. And you know, Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tell, and it's just a great collection of stories. And it's been getting a lot of good praise out there. So I appreciate everybody that's heard about it and purchased the book and had a chance to read it. So we're real pleased with it. We've been on the first leg of our sort of late spring, early summer tour. We did have the opportunity to visit the Denver-Boulder area last week, which was great. We got there just as the storms were leaving, and we left just as the storms were coming back.
Yeah.
So we timed it just about right. The flight in was kind of rough, but other than that, it was gorgeous. And we got some time to go to the Denver Zoo, which is for the people in the area. If you haven't done that or haven't done it in a while, please do. It's just a fabulous, fabulous day. You know, take a good day. Take your kids there. Wonderful zoo. So big praises to the Denver Zoo.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get sidetracked, Tim, tell everybody where they can buy your book.
You can buy the book at all major retailers or online at your favorite internet purchasing site. So you can
like
go on
Amazon? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and Borders.com and Indie.com. So wherever you usually buy your books, they should have it. And if they don't, they can get it to you real quick. But it's Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tell. And it's just a great, great book. It's a great gift item. And like you said, you know, I think that it's very appropriate the way it's written. It's very appropriate for young adults as well. They can get a lot out of it.
It's
so
appropriate for those that are skeptical about animal communication too, because it kind of just, you know, it doesn't go into so much detail. It's not overwhelming. It's simply told. So I'd like to see you write another book for those of us that aren't skeptical and would like to learn more about the transition phase and, you know, how animals do communicate. So that's
right.
Your next job, Tim.
We'll get cracking on it.
And
yeah,
we
had
to see some horses in there too. Okay.
I know. You know, it's fascinating because the book covers. You know, I uncovered this gift about 5 years ago, and I started working with my own animals and started working with the animals of friends, and then we started getting involved in rescue. So really, when it boils down to it, you know, then I decided to leave my corporate job, as you know, and start doing this full-time in the fall of 2007. And that's when the stories in this book started to take off. And the 32 stories are actually just a whittled-down list of animals I worked with over the first 4 months that I started doing this. So we had to take the collection and narrow it down to a nice manageable number of stories. And as you can see early on, the stories cover mostly dogs and cats, and I think there's a praying mantis story in there. But now, you know, it's developed where I started working more with horses, and then other animals started coming into play, and now I'm working with animals in the wild and animals that are at zoos and aquariums. And so there's enough stories out there to write a whole series of wagging tails. So
maybe
a movie. That's right. So go out and buy the book, and then I'll be able to get somebody interested and let me write maybe the whole series of wagging tails, and
that would be great.
Yeah, maybe even do one that's wagging tails for the horse lover soul. You know, something like that.
I like it. Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, I think we talked about this last show, was, you know, with the economy, I talked to somebody at our local Humane Society, and they said the amount of dogs that are coming in, and cats, and even other animals, like even lizards, has really increased. They said in 1 week they took in 10 dogs. From people that are losing their homes or being displaced. And so I want to encourage everybody to, if you can't volunteer your time, just a few bucks a week. You know, I'm not a rich person, but I sponsor a horse at Colorado Horse Rescue. I take a portion of whatever I can sell and contribute to that. And it's a wonderful feeling because there's so many that need us, so...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's it's huge, and it's big accolades for you to be able to do that. We obviously, with Wagging Tails, the business and the book, Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail, a portion of those proceeds go back to animal rescue organizations. And we've done events. We've got a wonderful Save the Horses group here in Cumming, Georgia, where I live, and they're a rescue group. And so we did some events with them early this spring. And then the cool thing with this book tour is we have teamed up with a local rescue group in each city that we've been in, and we have them bring their dogs and cats, usually dogs and cats because we're doing a lot of TV and a lot of radio and a lot of book signing events. So they're allowed to bring the dogs and cats into the buildings. But we invite them in, and they get the exposure for being at the events. They set up adoptions at the book signings. They get seen on TV, both local as well as national shows that we're doing, so they get some exposure. And then, of course, a portion of our proceeds from that trip will go back to that rescue organization. And that's probably been one of the best things about this, because we've done it here in Atlanta, we've been to New York City, we've been to Dallas, Fort Worth area, Denver, Boulder area, and then we're off next week to Phoenix and then to San Diego. And at each of those locations, we've got a new bunch of friends now, you know, a group that we've teamed up with and given them great exposure and helping them get those animals into their right and perfect homes, and giving a little bit of money back too. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. The rescue groups need help. If you can spare a little bit of money and help them financially, that's great. But if not, then your time, just spending time with the animals, helping out in some capacity. If you have a skill set, whether it would be working on websites or computers, whether it's fundraising, whether it's PR, whatever your talent is or your profession, they can use it at the shelters because they need all that help. They need community outreach people and people that know how to raise funds and do these things. And if
Absolutely.
You don't have that skill, yeah. So, you know, and if you don't have that skill set or that, expertise, then go there and volunteer your time just to play with the animals and pet the animals and groom them and do those things because that can go a long way with making those animals feel good about themselves and get them in those right and perfect forever homes.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So in your travels, Tim, are most people positive towards this or do you come across some that are a little skeptical or what's the kind of feedback you're getting?
The feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, which is fantastic. You know, it's one of those things where I think that you and I have talked about it. You know, I think the society as a whole is slowly turning the corner to realize that there's more out there than what we'd like to, you know, that we first believed. You know, there are ways that we can connect with our animals on a much deeper level and understand them. And I also think that, you know, people see that I'm out there. As I tell the story over and over, people ask me what I want to accomplish, what's my legacy. And I tell people that I'm just here to give the animals a voice. I'm here to give them a voice and to build the best relationship possible between you and your pets or you and the animals, a better understanding. And if I can do that, then that's my legacy. And I think when they see me out there doing my work and talking about it and actually, I do some speaking events and some individual consultations after the events and they see the responses that their animals are giving me, they can't help but know that there's something there and it's something good and it's something genuine. And that's why I try to bring out is the fact that I'm just here to help the animals and help you out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps the people, too. Helps the people to understand what's going on a little more. And so, you know, we were chatting before we started about missing animals because my daughter lost her two kitties and my grandkids were pretty upset about it. My grandson especially because he was very attached to the little male kitty. And so Tim was helping me with that. But the way he explains their mindset is amazing to me. It really, it's kind of sad but comforting at the same time. If that makes any sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. You know, their thought patterns and why they do the things they do are different than what perhaps we want them to do or what we understand. So when I talk about lost animals, and I deal a lot with lost animals of different types, mostly dogs and cats, but I've had smaller animals, and I've even had horses that have been lost or even stolen that we help to try to track down and bring them home. And on those cases where, you know, some of them are fairly straightforward, you know, you have an animal that wants to get outside and wants to explore a little bit, and we have to convince them to come back home or go to a centralized place where you can find them and help, you know, bring them home safely, that it's not safe for them to be out. And there are others that, you know, get outside and they're chased away by a predator or by a human, and they're kind of fearful about coming back, and we have to convince them that that threat is gone and it's safe for them to come back home. And then there are others that leave home for basically because their purpose, their mission for being with you is finished. So we have stories that of people I've worked with where, here's a great one, for example. A lady I know had been going through a tough situation, a tough relationship, and was going through the middle of a pretty messy divorce. And so her heart was broken, and she was probably at the lowest part of her life. So her friends, as a gift, got her a little kitten. And the kitten stayed with her for 4 years. And during that 4 years, the lady's confidence built back up. She felt better about herself. The cat was a constant companion. And she got to the point where she started dating again and found someone that she fell in love with. And they decided to get married. And about 1 week after the marriage, at the age of four, the cat inexplicably dies, passes on, dies of a heart attack when there was no sign of it before. It never had any heart problems. It was only 4 years old. There was no issues whatsoever with the cat. And so she always was wondering about that, and was, you know, was beating herself up over the fact that this cat had passed away, and did she do enough, and, you know, could she have done more, could she have found out about it sooner than what she did. And in reality, that cat was there to get her through that healing process, to get her through that process of making her feel her self-worth come back up to where it needed to be, and to feel confident enough and to trust that there is love out there. And so in this case, the cat chose to leave, to transition out of its body, when the cat knew that the lady was back on track and everything was good. And so we've got those type of stories. There are other stories where the cat will actually, cat or dog, will actually leave the house and not return back. And the people are wondering, what, you know, what's going on, if something happened. And we find out that nothing happened to the dog or the cat, that they're perfectly fine. It's just that their purpose for being with you was finished, and now they're on to meet with someone else, another person or another family, to accomplish that same purpose and that same mission to help them out. And so it had nothing to do with you. It had nothing to do with the fact that you weren't, you know, giving them the best, because you were, and giving them enough love, which you were. But it's more of that they're here for a mission and purpose, and sometimes that mission and purpose means that they do that same teaching with multiple people. And that's a hard one for us humans to understand, but that's that's the way the animal thinks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's got to be hard when you actually tell someone, well, you know, they left because it's their time. I think people are going to take that a little more personal.
They do, and so we have to be very delicate about that. That's probably the toughest one, you know. It hurts when you know that they've left to pass on. It hurts when you know that they've been taken by someone. It hurts when they've been chased by a predator and can't get back. But it's even more delicate when we have to deal with that psyche of ours, you know, that feeling that we're always questioning, why are animals left us? Did we not do enough for them? And that's not the case in quite a few cases. But, you know, our animals are real interesting. We were talking about the fact that, you know, animals come down here for a mission and purpose just like we do, and then they leave their bodies just like we do. But with us humans, we have this thing we like that we have to deal with, which is called closure. And in order to get closure on a situation, we have to be there in order to really understand it. So whenever one of our loved ones passes on, we desperately try to get back, not only just to see them one last time, but actually be part of that closure process, to see that body transition, to feel that, okay, that everything's fine. And with our animals, it's different. Our animals actually like to wait until no one's around, or they leave the home to transition. It's not uncommon for an animal to, for a person to leave their home to go to work or go on a trip somewhere, and then their animal passes away once they're gone, because the animal wants to save you from that grief, save you from that seeing that whole process of closure. And with humans, it's just the opposite. We want to be there. So we have a tough time that when we're gone and our animals pass on, they're thinking they're doing the right thing. We're thinking that they need to hold on until we get back.
And we're thinking, if only we hadn't left, our animal would still be here.
We'd still be
here.
So, exactly. And so that's where, you know, I do a lot of work with, not only when animals, we know they're sick and we need to help them transition, I work with people to help them understand that process, what the wishes are of the animal, how they're feeling, is it the right time to go. But I also do an equal amount of work afterwards to help you gain that closure and to connect with that animal and to better understand that whole process, so you can get rid of that grief and get rid of that, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda type of a scenario. And that's always a tough one. I remember one particular client that her dog had developed cancer, and we were working with it for about 4 months. I was doing energy healing work on the dog a couple of times a week in person, and we were connecting with the dog consistently to see how they were doing, and were they getting better, were they stabilizing, or was it getting worse. And during this whole process, I obviously got very close with the owner of the animal, the human companion, and she had stated that she had planned to go on a trip to Hawaii, sort of a second honeymoon with her husband. And she'd been planning this trip for about 6 months, long before the dog developed cancer. Well, not long, but 2 months before the dog developed cancer. And so she was really beating herself up whether she should go or not go. Should she, you know, cancel the trip, you know, take the hit on the flights and the hotel reservations and all that. And so we connected with the dog, and the dog said that, you know, he wanted her to go, thought it was important for her to go on this and help, you know, continue to build the best relationship between her and her husband, because things have been a little touchy. And the dog, in order to show his positive response to her going, all of a sudden took a turn for the better, started doing better, started eating better, was actually becoming a little bit more active, and was showing that, hey, I can take care of myself. Everything will be fine. Don't you worry about me. Go on and do what you need to do. And so she made the decision to go ahead and go. And as soon as she landed in Hawaii, the dog transitioned. And so the dog wanted her to see him in the best light possible, his old energetic self, you know, his positive manner. He wanted her to feel that energy and not have to be there during that tough transition time. And of course, you know, here she was thousands of miles away and was beating herself up over the situation, felt that she should have been there when he transitioned. And, you know, in reality, you did exactly what he wanted you to do, so you honored him. She honored him in this situation. And you know, so she had to feel good about it, even though it's a sad time.
Well, you know, a lot of people think, well, why would my animal run away or leave? They've got it so good here. You know, they've got food, they've got love. Why would they leave and not come back? And I think that's hard for people to understand the reason why these animals don't come back.
Yeah, it is hard, because, I mean, it's probably the hardest thing you have to go through. You know, when our animals get sick, that's a tough situation, and we have to deal with it and help them out the best we can, but we're there every day helping them out. And, of course, when we've got a great life with them, you know, we're there experiencing that great life with them. But when they just leave, and you don't know where they're at, you don't know if they were taken or stolen, did they leave because they wanted to, did I treat them right, are they sick, were they chased away, all these things you have no doubt, you have no answers for, and you're just helpless. You're just helpless out there. So it's one of the worst experiences that a person, I think, that has a pet can go through. But, you know, that's where I come into play, you know, being able to communicate with the animal to find out as much information as I can about how they are and where they're at, and try to get the information and try to convince them to come back if possible. And also to help do, you know, I do a method called map dowsing, where I take a map and I take a pendulum and I douse for the energy of the animal, and we try to narrow down the general area where the animal energy is coming from. And in some cases, you know, sometimes it's, you know, several blocks, if not a mile from where, you know, the area that the energy is coming from. So it's quite vast. But a lot of times it pinpoints down to the same, you know, exact house or the exact neighborhood where the animal is at. So we can narrow down where we can do our search and hopefully find the animal and help them get back home. But, you know, there are numerous reasons. There's numerous reasons why our pets leave home. And some of it is that they're just curious and they want to explore, and hopefully we can convince them to come back. And other times they're chased away, and we have to try to convince them the predator is no longer there, or even in some cases eliminate the predator, move them out of the way, or try to find out exactly why they left. There's a great story in the book, Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tell, about Madison the cat. And Madison's a cat that lives in City Island, New York. It's right outside the Bronx. And Madison lives on the fourth story of an apartment complex with a nice little balcony. And Madison is Madison's declawed, has no collar, no chip, no anything, because for 4 years of her life, she's never been, or all of her life, actually, she's never been outside. And on a nice spring day, Madison's mommy opened the window to let some air in, and Madison took that opportunity to climb out the window onto the balcony and then jump down four stories to the ground.
My God.
I know.
Yeah.
And Madison did just fine, survived that, no problem. But then couldn't figure out how to get back in. You know, it was very interesting to her. But then it's like, okay, this is not as cool as I thought it was going to be. So now I need to figure out how to get back in. And she couldn't figure out how to get back in. So we went on this. I got contacted here in Atlanta. Madison's in City Island, New York. And we worked for 3 weeks daily to try to get Madison to come back. And what we find out that there's actually a predator in the area, another feral male cat in the area that's blocking her from coming back. And so we identify where the cat is, and we get the cat taken care of, get it fixed, get it relocated to another feral colony where it can be fed and kept, and which opened the window for Madison to come back. And lo and behold, Madison comes back. So that was one of the scenarios where Madison thought it would be interesting, gets out there, and then says, oh, my, I don't know how to get back, and now I've got this predator in front of me. So unless somebody can get this predator, this cat, out of my way, I'm not going to be able to come back. Mm. So, you know, it's, that was one of them that had a great ending, had a very happy ending. And the cool thing is that, you know, that story dates back about a year and a half ago. And as I mentioned, I did all the work while I was here in Atlanta. The owner and the cat were in City Island, New York. Well, I did a book signing up in Long Island when I was up in New York a few weeks ago. And Bobby, the owner, shows up at the speaking signing event. So I actually get to meet her for the first time. And she sends me pictures of Madison all the time and sends me a Christmas card with Madison's picture on it. And she said, which is great. And she was telling me now that her balcony, she has put a top covering on the balcony and it screened in the whole balcony. So Madison now can go out a little kitty door out to the balcony and get some fresh air, but can't get down. So Madison's got the sweet life now, and I don't think Madison will be jumping off of any more balconies anytime soon.
Well, let me ask you your opinion here, Tim. You get these animals, and, you know, you want to protect them, but do you think... It seems like sometimes we go too far in trying to protect them. Like, for instance, I have chickens, and everyone who has chickens knows that it's a full-time job keeping them safe from predators. It really is, because there are so many predators out there for chickens. And so you want to let them out. You can see that they're miserable being penned in. You want to let them free range. But then your heart's in your throat the whole time, because there's either hawks or cats or raccoons or foxes, or, you know, you're worried the whole time you're letting them out. So is the answer to keep them penned up and sad, or let them live a happy life and risk them getting killed?
Well, I think you have to do, I think you have to do a little bit of both. And what I would say to that, first of all, be smart about it. Whether we're talking about chickens or cats, or whether we're talking about dogs or horses, whatever it may be smart about it. Realize, you know, the first step is you realize that there's predators around for your chickens. Make sure, though, that you try to provide them a safe as environment as you possibly can, and put the steps in place that you can within reason. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And don't just assume that, you know, they're free-range chickens, let them go, and the ones that come back, you know, come back. So try to put the precautions in place. The second thing I think you need to do is you got to feel confident about it. You got to get that worry out of your mind. You can't constantly worry about it, because if you're projecting out worry, then that means you're projecting out negative energy. And whenever there's negative energy out there, you get back negative energy. So it's that old saying of, you know, what you put out there is what you get. So once you've done everything you think that you're able to do, then feel confident that that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen to your chickens. I know it's not going to happen, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. So feel positive about it. And I think, you know, when we're talking about the chickens, you know, if you can provide a big enough place and it's protected, you know, by, you know, a screened-in area or something of that sort, or if you can let them out for shorter periods of time, then perhaps that's the answer. But you've got to feel confident about what you're doing and just know that you're putting the things in place that you need to put into place.
But what about someone with cats? Because cats naturally want to roam. It's not like a dog where you can keep it in your backyard. And I think this is probably a problem for a lot of people. So they go to the extreme of never letting them out. Or maybe that's not extreme. Maybe I just see it as extreme.
Right. Well, I think it's what the ant, when we're talking about cats and dogs, you know, your typical cats and dogs that will stay inside. My personal belief is that if it's explained to them what the situation is, what they need to do, and why it's okay, then keeping them indoors, and not letting them out is acceptable. Now, of course, if you have a dog, you got to take them out on a leash, or mm-hmm. and if you're in a backyard, and even if you're backyard's fenced, go out there with them. Be part of that. Watch them. Make sure nothing happens. Because we, you know, I've had many times that I've been called where either the dog has got, you know, somebody's left the gate open. The dog gets excited by chasing a squirrel and jumps over the fence or digs under it. Or the dog's in the backyard and people think that's enough exercise, enough mental stimulation for the dog. And it's not. You know, walking them on a leash, doing other things with them mentally stimulates them. So they get bored, and thus they get into trouble. So you can't just simply let your dog out in the backyard and let him be for the whole day without the risk of him getting into trouble or running off. Same thing with the cat. If you let the cat go in and out at free will, well, now you've got predators in the area. You've also got other challenges. There's cars, you know, perhaps in the area if they're crossing the roads. There's a lot of things that go into play with your cat that you have to be aware of. So for the cat, I always tell people, you know, I've got some clients that have fenced in their backyard and then put a netting over the entire fence.
Oh, my gosh.
Sort of put their own sanctuary back there and kept their cats in there. Now, that's great if you can afford to do that and you've got the setup to do that. That's fantastic. But, you know, not everybody can do that. But for the cat, there are collapsible pens that you can get that you can actually set up. It's almost like a doggy pen, has a little roof on it, and you can fold them up and put them away whenever you need to. And you can actually put your cat in there, and they can eat the grass, they can feel the ground, they can smell everything, they can be part of nature, but they're still in a protected area. There are also some products out there. There's a wonderful little catalog, if people aren't familiar with it, called Doctors Foster and Smith. And Doctors Foster and Smith has some wonderful little things in there you can do for your dogs and your cats. For instance, there is a little collapsible run, green. It's sort of a green run. It's sort of, you can put it up like it's a serpentine, like a snake, and the cat, you can put the cats in there, and it can run up and down this whole area and still be outside but still be protected.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Which
is
very cool. And then, of course, you know, you see at the pet stores as well as other places, if you've got a small dog, you have to be worried about that as far as predators and something happening to that dog. So there are these even little baby carts that you can take your dog out into. Now, that looks kind of silly, but, you know, the whole purpose is to let the animal outside. You're wanting them to not only get some physical stimulation, but you're wanting them to get some mental stimulation, but you need to keep them protected also. So, you know, if we're talking dogs and
kids.
Just like kids.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking dogs and cats, we want to make sure that they have proper identification. So make sure they have collars and tags. Make sure that they're microchipped, so if they do get lost and someone finds them, that's the first thing they check to see if it's microchipped. So make sure that happens. And then when you've let your animals outside, spend time with them. Spend that quality time with them, not only to supervise them, but that is your opportunity to go out there and feel their positive energy, to breathe the air, to calm your mind and calm your soul. You know, we're no good to anybody, including our pets, if we're constantly going 1,000 miles an hour and doing things, and we're definitely no good to them if we're sitting there watching TV all day long or working on the computer all day long. So get out there, take those times with your pets. I mean, we've got in our house here, I've got two schnauzers, and we've got this very big backyard. I mean, it's quite vast. It's almost an acre in the back, and it's all fenced in, and it has wiring in between it's the corral fencing, and it has wire between it, so there's no way anything can get in or get out unless it jumps completely over the fence. But we still, when we let them out, we go out there with them. And we keep an eye on things because we don't want them to get into trouble or anything getting to them. We don't want to take the chance of anybody swiping them, because I get calls on that also where someone has taken their pet, stolen their pet. But more importantly, it's our time to say, oh, man, I didn't realize I was sitting there at that, you know, on the phone for the past 3 hours, or I didn't realize I got caught on the computer updating the website for the past 4 hours. So, you know, it's my time to sort of say, oh, I'm going to take advantage of this, the world and all the wonderful things that our pets see and feel and smell every day. And so I think it's important for you to do that. So I think for, you know, people that have animals and they feel they need to let them outside, then put every precaution in place that you can. Go out there with them and spend the time with them, and I think you're going to find a much happier pet and you're going to feel good about things as well.
Very good pointers. You know, for my rabbits, I have a little playpen that I built that they can play in. And I know they'd rather be out free, but then, you know, I always explain to them, you know, this is for your safety, but I guess I need to explain to my chickens, too, that it's for their own good.
Yeah, just explain what the situation is, why it's good, what that you need them to do, and why it's going to be a good thing. We have a rabbit, Ripley the rabbit here in the house, and he's got a nice, wonderful pen that he's in, and he's completely potty trained, so everything's great. But once
That's
a day...
Cool.
Yeah, but we also have this big, huge playpen, just probably similar to what yours is, but this big, giant playpen that once a day, we get him out, we put him in the playpen, and got all of his little toys and hutches and different stuff in this playpen so he can run around and rip it up. And the important thing is we spend time with him during that time. And so we're actually spending interfacing time. Because, you know, rabbits are like a lot of, you know, some of our other domesticated animals that we don't actually, we see them there, we feed them, we say hi to them, but we don't necessarily get to spend a whole lot of time with them.
So
this gives Ripley the opportunity to stretch his legs and get some stimulation, but also for us to shut it down a little bit and connect with Ripley because he's a big part of our life.
And they're easy to house train, rabbits are.
Yeah,
I mean,
very.
Potty trained.
Potty trained, yeah, very easy. I mean, you just... stick a little pin, you know, little plastic bin. We have a little plastic bin, sort of like one of those portable tarantula cages without the lid on it. And we drill a couple holes in the corner, and we fasten it to the side of the pin or the cage that he's in. And, yeah, when he wants to do his business, he goes in there, and when he's done, he hops out and, you know, gets changed out when it needs to be changed out. So they're actually one of the easiest pets to have in the household, as long as you keep them mentally stimulated, and you make sure that they're eating the wrong things because they love to chew.
I was just going to say they like to chew wires especially.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine many years ago that she had a rabbit that a lop-eared rabbit, floppy one, and she never put it in a pen. She let it roam around her apartment all the time, and yeah, not the safest thing to do, but that's what she did. But he has little poo pan, you know, his little pee pan, and he'd jump in there and do his business, and you know, and she would dump it out. So it was almost like having a cat in her house, but it was a little rabbit running around. But, yep, you got to watch for the wires. You got to watch for the wood around the bottom of the walls and different stuff like that to make sure they're not getting in trouble and ruining your things.
Yeah, they do like to chew wood, too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely so. So, yeah, I think with lost animals, you know, it's a tough, tough situation. You know, I'm dealing with, and it's all types, really. You know, it's mostly dogs and cats, but, you know, I get, like I mentioned, I've had some people call me about a horse that's disappeared, that's gotten loose out of the pasture. I've had calls from people where their prized horses have been stolen, and we have to track them down to figure out where they're at and give them the best chance of recovering their horses. So it's, you know, in every case, just try to do the best you can. Make sure you put every precaution into place, and, you know, if you can, spend as much time as you can with them. That's the best policy.
Well, with horses, how is that different than dogs and cats?
What, as far as locating them or as far as when they leave?
Well, yeah, I can't see how they could get that far.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, it depends. It depends on where you're located at and what the surroundings are. You know, they can run into predators just like anything else. You know, cars is a big one, especially on the country roads.
Yeah.
They can be hit by a car very easily. And people are interesting, you know, that I've seen cases where people will find a horse and think it's just an abandoned horse, a wild horse. You know, this is a super sweet wild horse, you know, and the horse didn't have any sort of tags or markings on it, didn't have any sort of, you know, bridle or anything to identify it. It was just sort of, you know, free pasture horse type of thing, and got loose, and people have just decided to keep it because they thought it was just an abandoned horse.
Oh, goodness.
So it's real interesting what people think. You know, it's same thing with dogs. Even if you get a microchipped, some people, you know, the collar will come off, and people will find the dog, and they don't even think about getting it scanned for a microchip until they take it to the veterinarian for the first time. And then when they do that's a natural thing for a veterinarian to do, is to scan for a chip if they know that the animal's been
That's the first thing they do.
Exactly. But, so horse is a little bit different. But, you know, the whole mindset of the horse is just like any other animal. And, you know, same thing with them passing on. If they choose to do that, they prefer to do it on their own accord, if possible, prefer to do it when you're not around, if possible. And it's a tough thing to do. But, yeah, you got to protect your horses as well.
Well, that's a little more difficult because most people don't leave a halter on a horse. You know, so they have no kind of way to identify them.
Yeah, unless there's some sort of, you know, a marking or some sort of a branding or something.
A brand,
like
that. Yeah.
Makes it tougher. So, yeah, check those fences and check those gates as often as you can. That's probably the best thing you can do.
Absolutely. And one thing I'd like your opinion on, Tim, is I know a lot of people think they're helping. I ran into this the other night. I was on my way to the horse rescue, and there was a dog in the middle of the road just standing there. And I stopped, and sweetest dog, and I could see she had a collar and a tag. And my first instinct was to take her, you know, and then I thought, no, if I leave her alone, she'll go home. Because I think a lot of people, if they just let the animals go, they naturally go home. Or do you think I'm wrong?
Boy, that's a tough one. That is a tough one to do. I personally, if I find one out and about, unless they show some signs of aggression or they're telling me that, you know, go ahead and, you know, I belong here or I live close by, then when they tell me that information, then I leave them alone. Otherwise, I try to rescue them, you know, and if they have the proper identification, I'll take them back to the owner. If they don't, I'll take them to a veterinarian's office or a rescue group and see if we can get them scanned and see if we can find the proper home for them.
Yeah, but
you know,
some people will just hold on to them. I lost a dog once that ended up being a block down the road, and the people were just keeping her there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had let her go, she probably would have just come home.
Yeah, and as part of that mindset, you know, some people, they just don't know any better. They think they're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
Some assume that, well, maybe the animal was just dropped off in the neighborhood. I get that a lot. You know, people that live in a nice neighborhood, they say, oh, somebody just dropped off this animal, which may or may not be the case. And some people just choose to keep them. You know, it's a neat little dog, and, I'm just going to keep it.
I wanted to take this dog. She was adorable, and I was really torn, but she seemed fine. She didn't seem to be any distress, so... But I thought about it the whole way to the horses. Was that the right thing? Should I have picked her up and maybe called the pound? But that causes more problems sometimes for people because then they have to go pick up their animal and pay this big fee. So,
well,
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. The way I sort of look at that is, you know, you have to go with your gut feeling. You have to go with your intuition on what you think is best and believe that is that's the best way to do it. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, if you had the animal and you took it in somewhere and got it scanned and found that it belonged to someone and someone had to come get their dog and pay the fee, well, you know, I hate to sound so crass, but when you impact somebody's pocketbook, they tend to wake up really quick. So,
yeah, true.
Yeah, so even if the dog got loose and they'd done everything they thought they could, then they need to go back and look again, spend more time with that animal, set up a better protection area for that animal. And if they just didn't care or just let their dog run loose, well, that'll that'll get them to think a little bit about that the next time, because we got, you know, they're part of our family. They're like our children. We've got to take care of them. We've made that commitment, so we've got to follow through with it. So we have to, you know, we have to protect them and make sure that we're doing everything we can to help them out.
Yeah, we have to take care of them, not only physically, but mentally. Like you keep saying, we need to spend time with them. That's very important. Even people that have rabbits or chickens, you know, they're out there in a cage, but they're still social. They want interaction. You know, go spend a few minutes brushing them or playing with them with toys, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Not that hard.
No, it's not, and it's going to be very calming for you, so it's going to give your spirits a lift and give you, get you feeling better about the day and about yourself. And, yeah, if you want to keep a healthy and happy pet of any sort, you've got to mentally and emotionally, you know, stimulate them. And that means spending time with them and brushing them and playing with them, and or at the very least just spending time, you know, just being with them. You know, as humans, that's the toughest thing we have to accomplish is just being. You know, just being here. You don't have to do anything.
That's,
you know,
so true. Especially women, we always feel like we need to be doing.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard not to be doing that. Even when I've, you know, when I'm on vacation, it's hard for me just to sit there and do absolutely nothing and not feel guilty about it. And that's really, you know, that's really ridiculous. You know, you got to show
it. It is, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. You know, you're always thinking about something else, and it's like, oh, man, if I just sit here and do nothing, then, you know, I'm going to waste an hour and I could be doing something. It's like, well, no. Do something for yourself.
True.
Just take some time and just do nothing, you know. Set in the quiet, and that's you'll actually feel a lot better about yourself.
Well, our time is about up for today, and so we didn't get any questions. I think everyone was just fascinated listening.
Well, that's good.
Angela did mention that, let's see if I can find it here. She said she saw, Angie, if you're listening, post that again. You said you saw something on the newsletter or something and wanted to congratulate you. So I'll see if she'll post that back up real quick.
Okay. Great, great. Well, I think that, you know, for everybody listening, you know, you mentioned the newsletter. If you go to my website, wagging-tails.com, wagging-tails.com, you can sign up for the free monthly newsletter. And in the newsletter, we have not only the latest, greatest events and things going on in my world, but we always include a couple of helpful hints, things, tips that you can implement today to have a better relationship with your pets and to take better care of them. So it's a wonderful free e-newsletter, so I encourage people to sign up for that. You can also spend some time there on the website, wagging-tails, and learn more about me and the events. We've attached most of the TV and radio clips and appearance clips that we've had from our various tours, so you can get the latest, greatest on that. So we try to keep everything fresh, including our conversations here on NHN. So you can always listen to that, and you can download them because they're in MP3 form, and they're iPod-friendly, so you can always download them and listen to them at your leisure. And so it's a great place. And it'll also tell you a little bit about the book, Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail. And if you haven't gotten a copy yet, I encourage you to do so. And then send me a note. Let me know what you think about it. And you can also post your comments on Amazon.com. And that's whether you buy it on Amazon or not. You can still go in there, and there's an author page.
Good point. I'm going to do that when the show's over.
Great. We appreciate that. We appreciate that. So it gives a chance for people to give reviews, and we got a nice author blog, or author sponsored site on there as well. So I encourage people to take a look at that. And if you're listening in and you're in the Phoenix or San Diego area, then definitely take a look at the site, because we're going to be all over the place in the Phoenix and San Diego area starting Monday. Monday we'll be out there and doing some speaking events, some book signings. We'll be on TV and radio and just having a real fun time and talking about the book and helping the animals out.
Wonderful. Well, Angie said that Nikki says hi.
Same here. Same here. I'm glad things are going well.
So, Tim, do you think there'll be a next book out, maybe with some horses in?
Boy, I sure hope so. I sure hope so. You know, if anybody knows any good agents and publishers, let me know. But no, my publicist and Greenleaf Book Group has done a fantastic job with the present book. And yeah, it's the tough thing about writing books, I'm finding out, is not necessarily sitting down and putting everything down, but all, you know, in print, but it's deciding what are you going to write and how are you going to take it. And so I've been asked to do more wagging tales types of books to get more stories out there and add more different types of animals. I've been asked to do books that are animal specific, so for the cat lover and the horse lover and the dog lover and the, you know, whatever else lover. I've got enough stories to probably do, you know, half a dozen more of those. There's been also people that, like you had mentioned, about going to the next level, explaining more detail about that whole process, about how do the animals actually think and how do they respond, how they deal with being lost and transitioning. So we've got that. And then there are other people who's like, I want to learn how to do this, write a how-to book. And I'm like, well.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, there's a lot of different ideas out there. It is keeping me very busy, but that's good. So we've got a lot of great ideas and a lot of great feedback. If anybody listening has any preferences, then send me an email at timlink@wagging-tales.com. And, yeah, we'll put that in the collection of the hopper and see what we come up with. So be looking for it. Yeah. And you can also, I do a lot of, just to let you know, I do a lot of articles, a lot of online articles, both in blogs and online newsletters and online magazines. So, you know, if you haven't recently, go to your favorite search engine and type in my name, and you're probably going to find some new articles out there. I try to include a lot of them on my website, but obviously there's only so much you can do on there. So keep an eye out. Yeah.
I'm going to look for some of those, too. Well, everybody, our time is up, and I want to thank you, Tim, for being here.
My pleasure.
And let everyone know that we will have Tim back. Not sure the date yet because I am moving beginning of August, so it may be middle of August or maybe mid-July. And we'll be able to take your calls on some of your pets again.
Sounds great. I'll look forward to that.
So thank you, everybody, and until next time. And goodbye, Tim.
Bye. Take care.
You too.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and be sure to tune in next time. Until then, this is DC from Natural Horse Network. Goodbye.